Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Love podcasts, hate nonsense. It's the Politics Show podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Demure. Very demure. Classy. Golf clap. Straight onto the green. How are we,
you're
guys? All right?
Yeah, you?
Yeah, good. I'm really good.
Good, yeah.
Laura, you're
good.
Right? Good. How have we been? What have we been up to? Since, I mean, we did three pods last week, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Three in a row. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
I have something that I think might be nice for the bean law.
Oh.
Mm. Bean law. Oh.
Yeah, like the bean suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was like the Dane law.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
So over the weekend, my friend's mum had a random attack where she had 3 cans of beans poured on her car and she's got no idea why.
the English. The English have... starting to get a little bit bolshy, aren't they? They're asserting their national identity again.
But it was a real... So it was behind a gate, this car.
Oh, so it's deliberate.
It's not like a... Yeah, yeah. They really... Yeah.
What message would you take from someone emptying 3 tins of beans over your car?
What does she have any idea who it was?
Not a clue. And she's... Yeah. She was not very happy about it, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it professionally cleaned because the beans had like...
Yeah, I can't. I was about to say, how would you get that off?
Yeah.
Baked in.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare. Absolute nightmare. I had a very bean-heavy fry-up on Friday, actually.
Yeah?
There were a lot of beans on it, yeah. I don't mind that, though. I like beans on my breakfast.
Was that a fry-up in Oxford, by any chance?
It certainly was over Santina.
And was that because you'd just come off the back of schooling Nancy Pelosi on populism?
No. Because it turns out that Nancy Pelosi and I were on the same side of the debate about populism, which I hadn't necessarily expected. But so no, I didn't school her at all. She and I schooled our opponents. Actually, I'm now 2-0 in posh debates.
Home and away,
Cambridge and Oxford.
I lost mine at Cambridge, so but I was shit. So there is that.
Wouldn't go that far. Well, I haven't actually seen what you said, but did they put the video out of yours yet?
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
I'm not to see the video of mine. I should check up on that.
Oh, wait, what was I going to ask? Oh, yeah. Are you able to tell us? Are you able to give us any insight into...
Well, I think allegedly, as I understand it, it's Chatham House rules in the debating chamber. But I don't understand how that works because they publish a video of the whole thing. So It can't be Chatham House rules.
So you can't say anything today?
I can say what I like today. Yeah.
Okay, who was your opponent?
Winston Marshall.
And who is Winston Marshall?
Well, Nancy Pelosi asked me the same question about halfway through a speech. She leaned into me and went, "Who is that guy?" And I was like, "Do you know Mumford and Sons?" And she said, "Yes." I was like, "He was the lead guitarist. He got cancelled and now he does a podcast." And she was like, "Oh, okay." Yeah, it was quite strong. He opened with like a trans gag and sort of lost the room immediately. He said something like, "Oh, I'm old-fashioned. People think I'm old-fashioned because I come from a time when women didn't have cocks." And it sort of continued in that vein. So,
how did Nancy Pelosi react to that opening line?
She was confused, I think. She was a little bit confused. But she didn't even have notes. She just stood up and did a 10-minute speech.
That's impressive.
She's 84.
God bless you, Laura. But is it? Because she's literally like... her title is speaker. Like,
she should be able to speak.
Yeah. The bar is so low. Like,
yeah, we marked him. We marked him. So it was good. Mm. It's good. What about you guys? What have you been up to?
I went to the anti-ULEZ protest with Ed on Saturday.
Unreal.
Which was lots of fun. Lots of interesting costumes. And they kept a van running, like its exhaust running the whole time we were there. And we were like trying to do interviews while like actively just inhaling so much like carbon monoxide. It was
so
it was
a protest. It's like, we are going to run this van in the ULEZ zone.
Yeah,
you
they were making
stop
a point.
Us polluting.
Yeah,
because there's a no idling rule in that area. Yeah.
It's like so close to twigging that like this thing exists to stop pollution. It's so close, but no, we're going to pollute and you can't stop us. There was a band there as well.
Yeah, the ULEZettes. The ULEZettes, yeah.
Right, okay.
I felt it was quite like, oh, this is like a social thing for you guys. I was like, I felt kind of like you guys would probably be doing this whether you cared about ULEZ or not. It was a little bit...
So they do covers, right? They sing songs but change words to make it about ULEZ and Sadiq Khan.
Yeah. Which Ed like got one really earwormed and wouldn't stop singing it while we were editing the whole time. And I was like, that's getting quite annoying now.
What was that?
Yeah, give us a little sample.
No, but it's the one that he sings in the end of the video.
Should we play? Well, should we have a little clip of that? Should we play
it? Yeah, well, I'd quite like to hear it. I'd quite like to know what it is.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I want rid of Cam. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner I can't drive for free wherever I go. We need to get these cameras down swiftly and vote for Susan Hall. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I want ULEZ gone.
Maybe it's because
I think I'm done. Thank you very much, ladies.
What? Thank you, ladies.
What song is that meant to be to the tune of?
Maybe because I'm a Londoner.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner. You know,
no,
that one.
I don't know that one. What is that?
Well,
is it an old song?
Yeah. It's a sort of like, you know, I don't know.
Well, like World War II vibes? Or?
You've never been in, like, My Fair Lady. You've never been like in a pub late at night when like the piano comes out and, no. You know.
That's
Sandra and Bill were...
That's not my vibe.
You know,
my
it's,
vibe.
Like, it's like K Sarah, you know.
Okay. Well, no, I haven't heard it before. Ed's not here because he's, well, presumably celebrating the resignation of Humza Yousaf today. I suspect he's probably about 10 pints deep so far. But fortunately, we have more than one token Scott in the company. So Laura's standing in to help us cover this story, I guess. I'm not going to go full token Scott. Ava, I'm still going to ask you to kick us off with what we got up to, but then I think we'll pull in Laura for some analysis, I think.
Okay.
Get us started. How did this all come about?
So on Thursday, the Scottish Greens were ejected from the Bute House agreement.
I mean, literally, right? He paraded them in front of the news cameras. He kicked them out the front door.
Yeah, he did. He said, get your stuff and get out. Presumably not actually thinking about the consequences of that. So the power sharing agreement means that there is one crucial vote that would mean that if he wanted to continue his premiership, he would have to go begging after the Alba Party's Ash Reagan. Mm. And weirdly, she had a whole list of demands that he didn't want to meet. And so consequently, over the weekend, rather than face a vote of no confidence tomorrow in his leadership, he's decided to stand down.
Does that give us like a year? About a year? Less than? Just over a year? How long has he been doing it for?
Oh, was it not
18 months?
Yeah.
It was in October. I just couldn't remember if it was last October or the one before that.
Laura, I mean, is this just a classic bit of sort of hubris? Is it just poor political judgment? How do we understand Humza Yousaf's decision to eject his coalition partners, of whom he relied on, well, to keep himself in government, and now seems to have arrived at the rather obvious conclusion that if you kick the coalition partners out, you won't be able to govern?
Mm. I think perhaps it's just a little bit lacking in the sort of political instinct that leaders like Nicola Sturgeon have had before in terms of dealing with media narratives and kind of controlling party discipline, because internally Humza Yousaf was facing quite a lot of pressures from some sections of the SNP to end the Butthouse agreement, because they weren't very happy with the Green Party's policies on things like gender issues, especially around children, and also to do with energy. Like, a lot of homes in the Highlands and Islands of Scotland still use traditional methods of heating their house, and they felt like the Greens were kind of infringing on a traditional way of life. And there is that more conservative element of the SNP, which I think, especially since Nicola Sturgeon left, we've started to see come more to the fore.
Yeah, that sort of tartan Tory wing, right? But the idea, particularly for a lot of younger people, actually, the idea that the SNP is nothing other than kind of a progressive political party, which also has the independence cause attached to it, don't realise that sort of the SNP's political heritage. I guess there's always, there's going to be an inclination anyway to oversimplify. All parties are a broad church, okay? So whether it's, you know, different views on independence within the SNP, you might be a gradualist, you might be not. But equally, in terms of social issues, in terms of economic issues, there is a broad spectrum, isn't there, of the party membership. And you might be sat there thinking, well, I thought the SNP was the party of gender self-ID and, you know, quite radical environmental policies. There's actually a pretty significant wing of the party that supports the party because of its views on independence and actually doesn't like the progressive politics that come with it, or have come with it, certainly since, well, under Nicola Sturgeon.
Definitely. And I think that goes back to kind of the idea of party discipline and how Nicola Sturgeon had such a tight rein on that, and how Humza Yousaf just hasn't managed to create the same within the SNP. And I think it raises really interesting questions about who is going to replace Humza Yousaf as First Minister, like which kind of faction of the party is going to succeed. To become First Minister in Holyrood, you have to have a simple majority of all MSPs. It's likely, though, without Humza Yousaf at the fore, that the Greens will support whoever the first, well, not whoever actually, they'll support John Swinney if John Swinney is elected as the First Minister, which a lot of people within the party are urging him to do, to become kind of like a caretaker First Minister until the next election. However, if Kate Forbes is that person, it looks unlikely the Greens would back her, because there is concerns over her personal views towards certain issues, and she is from the more conservative wing of the party. But within the SNP, there was kind of, or I heard talk of a kind of Kate Forbes, Jenny Gilruth joint ticket, which would satisfy kind of both sections of the party, having someone a bit more progressive and having someone a bit more conservative.
It's really interesting that you've kind of ended up with, despite Yousaf winning the last leadership election and defeating Kate Forbes and Ash Regan and that kind of, you know, more conservative bent, the sort of the political thinking that's clearly in some instances on some issues characterized by a kind of like we free type thinking. And yet 18 months later, we're in a position where, depending on the two outcomes and the directions that it goes in, either Kate Forbes or Ash Regan, both of them have kind of become political North Stars for the SNP, that the party's kind of being dragged towards their politics, right? Either because Ash would behave as a kingmaker, possibly as a single MSP within Holyrood, or because Kate Forbes will become the next First Minister, and again, that sort of more conservative line of politics. It's happened 18 months later, but the party's being dragged in that direction regardless.
It doesn't make sense to me that you would put them on a joint ticket, because that would be like putting, like, I don't know, like Miriam Cates and Caroline Noakes up together to both lead the Conservative Party. I mean, like, how on earth are you going to get anything done if you've got an evangelical with a progressive? But do you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense to me. Surely that's just like, if you're looking for stability, you wouldn't go after something as, well, calamitous as that.
More about compromise, I guess, isn't it?
But what's the compromise? Like, because there is no middle ground on gender ideology. You're either trans people can be in spaces or they can't be. There's no middle ground there. Do you know what I mean?
How much do we think gender as a political issue has led the SNP to this place? Because if we go back sort of 2, 3, 4 years, maybe a bit further, and you're kind of thinking Nicola Sturgeon, possibly at the height of her powers. Interesting through line in this, by the way, that maybe we'll get to, about whether or not the SNP can actually function not as a cult of personality, either around Alex Salmond or Nicola Sturgeon. But you get these gender self-ID laws, which she claims was, well, the inference was it was put about that kind of, that was the reason why she resigned, right? It's since transpired in relation to the criminal investigation going on into the SNP's affairs, that I think that probably had slightly more to do with her decision to resign as First Minister than anything else.
I don't think you can say that.
Why not?
Well, I don't know.
We don't know, obviously, why she decided to do that.
Thank
but,
God. Now we're in the league.
But yes, regardless. And then Humza Yousaf pursues this kind of hate speech law, which connects to gender again. Is this a case of if you take a shot at J.K. Rowling, you best not miss? And he missed, and the Queen's come back for him and put him in the ground. Like, how should we interpret his resignation in the context of gender politics?
I think in that resignation speech, he did dedicate a lot of it to how proud he was on his record of protecting minority rights and emphasised that he was going to continue to protect minority rights as a backbencher. But I think at the same time, you also saw him say, or in kind of imply, that we need to refocus the political debates in Scotland back onto the independence cause, back on to other economic issues, which is something that Alex Salmond was kind of saying on Laura Kunzberg at the weekend, the same thing that the political debate in Scotland has been too focused on the culture side of it and not enough on, and he had like a phrase that was like something basically meaning like the issues that actually affect people, jobs and energy, those sort of issues.
He was saying, Yousaf was saying, that independence was frustratingly close, and I just thought that was laughable. You can't possibly think that Scottish independence is close.
I mean, I'm conscious that you and I are the two English people on this panel, and I'm also about to agree with you and tell Laura that Scottish independence has never been further away. But it seems, it feels to me like possibly as in outside of our lifetimes. If you consider from 2014 to Sturgeon, and you're kind of thinking like, well, this feels maybe a when, not if question about certainly another vote or that it's going to happen. And in the space of 18 months, the SNP has essentially imploded. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I think this resignation is happening is because of the nature of the no confidence votes that he was facing. That second one put down by the Labour Party about having no confidence in the government, which if they'd have lost would have dissolved the parliament and triggered an election. They were staring down the barrel of a Labour victory in that Scottish election, right? I know, obviously, politics is not predictable, but the polling would certainly indicate that was going to be the case. So you're looking at possibly a unionist majority in Holyrood. Well, certainly, actually, probably. It feels a million miles away right now, Scottish independence. I don't know.
You're not going to turn to Scottish Labour, though, if you truly want independence or you think that it's going to be achieved, right? But then if there's the will for that has waned a bit, then you might be like, well, let's give them a go because there's going to be a Labour government in Westminster, and actually maybe it might be quite helpful
if the SNP does get a Kate Forbes leadership and does tack to the right, it wouldn't surprise me if there are a group of voters who said, you know what, independence is not as important for me right now as having a progressive progressive politics, and so that then return possibly to Labour. I mean, obviously it's complete conjecture, but
yeah. I think it's like Ed made a point a couple of weeks ago that
he's not here, Laura. Be your own woman. One Scot's the same as every Scot, for God's sake.
The support for independence isn't necessarily tied to support for the SNP, which I think is a good point to make.
Oh, I wanted you to say you think he was wrong.
Ed is a bitch.
Yeah.
Ed is a real bitch and he is wrong.
But yeah, no, it's so obvious the SNP have a massive popularity issue right now. And I think one of their biggest hurdles to that is their most popular and well-known and recognisable figures right now currently are in Westminster. But we've got like Mary Black and Ian Blackford saying that they are not going to rerun as MPs after a general election, which opens the floor to, well, are they going to run as MSPs? And with them eventually, after however long, helming the SNP, could that then change its tides again?
She's not ready to be First Minister though, Mary Black, is she?
I think she's incredibly popular. I think she's a great campaigner.
Not the same thing, though.
But they're not the same thing, and campaigning and governing are different things as well.
Yeah, I mean, who could foresee the consequences of appointing or putting forward a candidate to be first minister who basically has a cultish following, but maybe not necessarily not good at governing? Who could possibly see what would happen there?
Is there a world where in which Keir Starmer decides that he wants to pick up a lot of seats in Scotland, and so he says that he'll offer a referendum?
No.
No, yeah.
I don't think there is either. No. But that's the only sort of like. That's the only edging towards independence that I can see.
I'm really okay. We should definitely have this conversation because it is important. But I will just say I was reading the papers over the weekend, right? As you do, and the only piece of analysis I watched time and time again, read, heard, listened to, was the SNP's imploding. What does this mean for Westminster? Mm-hmm. And my initial reaction was, what does it fucking mean for Scotland? I think it's probably a slightly more important question to ask. Nonetheless, you're absolutely right. The electoral calculation changes. It changes our UK government calculation massively if the SNP implodes. Mm. Because previously, the basis for every single Labour Party majority essentially was a strong showing in Scotland. Since 2015, they've been effectively locked out, and I think it's one of the key reasons why they've got nowhere near power. If that changes, I mean, Keir Starmer is performing so strongly now that actually he doesn't need Scotland. The SNP could still take 40 seats and he'd be fine without them. But if they fall as well, I mean, you're already looking at a supermajority. I mean, it'd be crazy powerful. And so I don't think he has to offer anything like that. I think he's just, it's so peculiar actually, because in both instances, whether it's England, whether it's Scotland, whether it's Wales, the Labour Party appears to be directly benefiting from essentially the explosion of its political opponents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it's there to mop up, you know, dissatisfaction either with the ruling Conservatives or with the ruling SNP. And mm-hmm. that perhaps, here comes an argument for centrism, that if you can present yourself as being all things to all people, it means that, yes, okay, you don't get this groundswell of support. It's not like a 97 election where a Labour Party is being put in government on this huge tide of let's fucking go, new millennium, Labour Party, boom, boom, boom. Instead, it is, no, we are sick to our back teeth with the people who've been running the country for 14 years, 17 years, so we're going to give this guy a chance.
Yeah, but they're both centrist. Both options at the next election will be centrist.
Labour and?
The Tories.
You think so?
They've got pretty similar economic policy.
Yeah.
You're not...
I don't think you could call the Tory party centrist on social issues.
No, you couldn't. Sorry. But I did say economic
you
just
did.
Then. So, you know, let's just keep extrapolating.
No, fine. Yeah. I think they're quite similar economically. I mean, you've got a Labour Party from a same...
Actually, I'm going to fight you on that just because I feel like it.
That's fucking good.
What social policies are different between the Tories and Labour? Because if you... We had the Rwanda bill go through Parliament last week. Stephen Kinnock stood up to rebut the bill that had been put down. What did he say that the Labour Party are going to offer that is very different to Rwanda? Okay, they're not going to let the flights take off, but they are still going to have a massive crackdown on asylum crossings. They're going to break up the gangs at source. They're still going to prevent people from illegally coming over here. What's different about that social policy? You haven't got one side saying refugees welcome and the other one saying refugees not, have you? Mm. You've got a pretty similar tact.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't considered, actually. I wasn't coming at it from a...
No, you didn't think.
Labour.
Let's go to the next one.
Labour are socially progressive and the Tories aren't. I hadn't considered that actually if I was to argue that the Tories were socially to the right, that also actually because the Labour Party is tacking so closely to the Tory party that simultaneously it could also end up in a similar direction.
So next point. So, okay. So the Hillary Cass report that came out a couple of weeks ago, how did Wes Streeting react to it? We should learn the lessons from the Cass report. What was it that Rishi Sunak said? I think it was that we should learn the lessons from the Cass report. Would you like another?
Keep going. Go off.
Give me a hot topic. Okay, I've got one. PIP payments. The Tories are cracking down on PIP payments to people who are being signed off work sick. What are Labour going to offer as well? Oh, it's a crackdown on the PIP payments. They're going to get people off welfare, and they're going to get them into job training centres and into specialists. Sorry, what was different between the two of them?
So do you think that actually you couldn't call either of them centrist parties?
I don't know. The Overton window of centrism moves, doesn't it?
Yeah, so, it does. Yeah, when the main political party vacates the left-wing terrain, yes. Mm-hmm. What becomes centre does shift, I guess. But it's, I mean, if you think about it from like just a solely electoral perspective, if the Tories keep tacking to the right, and I suspect possibly they're going to tack further to the right once mm-hmm. they get massacred in the next general election, because of the nature of first past the post, all the Labour Party has to do is be slightly more left-wing than them on basically an issue, and it has everything to the left. They sweep it all up, right? If the Tories keep abandoning the centre ground, Labour can just move with them, and everyone behind them is left with no alternative, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're writing their strategy now.
My rates are very reasonable, Keir, if you're interested.
Even the quote-unquote nationalisation policy that they came out with last week for the trains.
Mm. You spoke to Mick Lynch about that.
I did, but it wasn't particularly... every group has interpreted it in the way that fits their politics. So if you're someone who believes in... you're not a neoliberal, you're like, this is fantastic, we're bringing everything under public control again. If you're someone who... If you're on the right, you'll be like, no, this is amazing because actually the service is so poor and we're wasting taxpayer money by divvying it out to big companies that actually it makes much more sense to bring it under government control.
Although shareholder payouts, not happening, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but parts of it will still be under private control, which means that the shareholders are still happy to some extent. Like, for example, I always forgot the name of it. The name of when you rent, they rent the carriages.
Rolling stock.
That's still going to continue. And rolling stock is essentially, if you don't know, it's like when the carriages that you get on, they're leased from big banks or train operators in Europe. And all of that money is just basically like siphoned from the taxpayer out to almost like a black stock kind of operation. That's still going to continue. So if you like that shit, you're happy too.
All things to all people.
Yeah.
Should we listen to a little bit of Mick Lynch, your interview with Mick Lynch?
Go on then.
Should we listen to him?
Here he is.
And we think that's a big step forward. It's not as good as we'd wanted. We wanted the rolling stock companies, leasing companies that take billions of pounds out of the railway in profit to be dealt with as well. And freight hasn't come back and there are some open access operators. But it is a good step forward. And we hope to build on that going forward until we get a full publicly owned railway.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the rolling stock? So why is that an issue?
Well, that's been set up under contracts that are a bit like the PFI contracts in public sector. So private entities take out complicated financial instruments in all sorts of offshore jurisdictions. They finance the trains and then the railway companies. And now in the future, the public railway and, of course, the passenger and the taxpayer have to pay for them over a 30-year period. So that would need special legislation and the way people are set up now, compensation for that. So the government can deal with that when they've got in. But I think the most important step forward is to get the operation of the railway into public hands so that it's accountable to the people and works in their interest. But it is a big issue because it will bleed money out of our railway system. But that's happening in hospitals, it's happening in education, and it's happened in the councils. And there's all sorts of corruption, I think, involved in that. And we've got to deal with it if we want to get the country straight.
There he is talking about rolling stock and the problems that there are with it. So what he's saying is that the plan is not ambitious enough. You're still allowing companies to leech off of the taxpayer. You're still allowing them to extract cash directly from the taxpayer. And until you break that up, you haven't got a nationalised system.
He was supportive, though, wasn't he? Of the measure broadly in terms of what the Labour Party announced?
Well, because he was saying it's a good first step. He's saying like this is where we start and then we keep moving. The problem is that if you've still got the rolling stock and you've still got freight and you've still got parts of it that are privately owned, then actually you're creating a system that's going to cost the government more in the long run, and then you'll eventually get to a space in 20 years' time where there'll be an argument for reprivatising all of it again because it's too much of a drain. £4 billion we give to rail companies every single year, and they get paid even if no one gets on the train, whether there's a pandemic, if there's a strike, they get paid every single time.
Do you think it is a first step for Labour, or do you think it's their only step to do it with rail?
It would be very, very expensive for them to buy back the parts that they've said will remain privatised. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be something that they'll do in the first term, because it'd be extortionate.
Is the mechanism for it is they're waiting for each of the contracts to expire, and then when they expire, they're just going to take them into internal.
But some of them have like 30-year contracts. And then the problem when you start breaking it up is that you might have like, you'll have a line like Great Western Rail that will also have like a, sorry, I don't have the exact one to hand, but like it'll be allocated that very, very profitable line. And then it'll be given a commuter service that is, say it's around Bolton or that area, that doesn't make any money at all. And then the two subsidise each other. So they're sort of matched. So the argument for nationalising it is that the government has all the big money-making lines, and then it can pour money into better commuter services, because instead of that profit going to the shareholder, the profit's just going back into the rail.
Your mention there of 30-year contracts, and it would be difficult for the Labour Party to buy them because someone in the last 30 years has just put the image in my head of like 30 years of Keir Starmer in my head, and about what that would look like for Britain. Let's do 30 years. To round out our conversation on Scotland, perhaps, Laura, Scottish government in 30 years' time. I mean, do we see independence, the long-term prospect of independence? How do you see what's happening with the SNP at the moment affecting that? What do you think the long-term political consequences of this scandal, this collapse, are going to be?
I mean, I think it's interesting that since the referendum in 2014 like didn't put an end to this, and that support for independence has stayed relatively very stable, like one in two people almost always supporting the independence cause, like it has longevity in it. And I'm quite interested in how we had so much stability in those years of the SNP, with successors basically being handed down to. And now that we've had Hamza Yousaf and this period of instability, I'm interested in how Hamza Yousaf will be remembered and what he'll be remembered for. I think on the positive side, he'll be remembered for being the first Muslim leader of a European country. I think he'll also be, him and Stephen Flynn, will be remembered for taking a much stronger stance on stopping the bombardment in Gaza and doing it a lot earlier than other political parties. I'm wondering, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, how much cut... Oh, I was going to say the word cut through, I hate myself. Mm-hmm. How important is Gaza in Scotland?
It is important. I think in the same way that you see parts of Ireland have like that kind of parallel with the, or feeling of closeness with the Gazan cause, like that exists in parts of Scotland as well. Obviously it's not the same as the reasons for the Irish, but it does exist.
Mm. That connection between kind of the sort of nationalist and republican communities in Northern Ireland, right? It's usually there. I mean, I haven't been back for a while, but in Belfast, usually you can see there's like, you know how sometimes in the UK there'll be people put like a white horse. I mean, it's actually kind of like a medieval thing, right? But on a hillside, there's one down at Dover, and there are others, and some of them are ancient, some of them are not. There's a guy in Belfast who just goes out and writes "Free Gaza" on the side of the hills that look over Belfast. It's there most of the time. I suspect there's probably something slightly bigger there now. This has been going on for 6 months, and so there is that connection, right, between sort of Irish Catholics, Republicans, that connection between sort of Northern Ireland, Ireland and Glasgow, and I guess other parts of Scotland as well, although I haven't travelled that extensively in Scotland, so I can't really speak to it that directly, but that connection there between the two. Nice. Is that us on Scotland? Is this where we swap out? So we swap out our esteemed colleague, Laura Beveridge. Laura, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Great work. Great work. Great work as the token Scot.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's the Politics Show. Cast.
And just like that, the magic of editing, Laura's left.
Oh, we... Sorry.
It is just Ava and I. I feel like we should maybe get Laura involved a little bit more. I don't think it's right to just be like, you're Scottish, so come on and talk about the Scottish stuff, you know?
Well, people like when Laura comes on.
They do. They love it when Laura comes on. I think it'd be better, actually. You can swap him for me, Laura, next time.
Or me, if you'd like to.
Do either of us like doing this?
I don't know.
Anyone replace me, please. So we'll move things on. We're going to talk about Brexit, Ava.
Yeah.
The happy news that from tomorrow, some pretty serious costs are going to start being imposed on businesses moving phytosanitary around.
Can you say that again?
Phytosanitary.
Oh, yeah? Why? What's that?
Phytosanitary standards.
Is that what they're called?
I believe so, yeah.
So I've never heard that before.
Have you guys heard that before? What?
No.
Am I saying it wrong? No, I'm not saying it wrong.
Probably not. I'm just a dumb fuck.
No, okay, come on now. What happens to self-love on this podcast? I feel like sometimes we're like super, you know, like friendly, happy. And then sometimes, I don't know what it is, we are just like miserable.
Maybe that's the personal coming into the workplace.
Yeah, phytosanitary certificate proves that your plants have been inspected and are free from dangerous pests and disease. Okay, so maybe I was using...
Ah, yes, of course.
Wait.
Phytosanitary.
Yes. Come on, no.
No. But
you must have heard that on the news. I'm not just saying that.
No, I haven't. But then I do think that you're a lot more plugged in to all of this.
To Brussels.
Well, no. To plants and all of that.
Rules, measures and regulations designed to protect human, animal and plant life and health from risks arising from additives, contaminants, toxins or disease-causing organisms. They ensure food is safe for consumption.
So
I was right. It is phytosanitary standards.
What sort of phytosanitary standards are you taking in your small holding?
Well, fortunately, everything that I grow, I don't use any pesticides. I don't use any herbicides. I have fertilizer. I often will use manures, actually.
What's your manure of choice?
On the ground. There is an alpaca farm.
Human.
Soylent Green. There's an alpaca farm in a village in Kent that just puts sacks of it outside. So if you catch them, for example, Christmas is usually a pretty good time because over the Christmas period, not a lot of people doing stuff in their allotments. And people travel, etc. They'll usually be, this Christmas, I picked up, I would say, about 250, 300 kilos of alpaca shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's...
I bet that was really nice in the back of the car. I bet that went down really well.
But the interesting thing about alpaca shit, and I don't know the correct terminology for this, but you can essentially plant directly into it. Whereas other manures, for example, you know, cow, horse, etc., you would really want to be putting them on the ground and then leaving them to rot down for several months minimum, ideally about six. You can chuck alpaca shit down in spring and then plant into it because it's because of the nature. I think it's something to do with their first of all, the diet, which is basically grass, and then their digestive system, which means that it doesn't, there's the seeds don't get nitrogen burned. I think that's what it is.
So you can pick up the alpaca shit and you just put it straight on.
Yes.
It's just like, wow.
Yeah, so you don't need, if you're, you know, slightly lazy, and if I was honest with you and told you that most of that alpaca shit has not been moved since I put it on the ground, you could, and I am going to, distribute it in the next coming weeks and then plant into it and it'll be happy as Larry, straight to go.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
It's quite good that, isn't it?
You want a mulch as well on top of that.
A mulch.
Yeah, ideally, if you want to get away from digging repeatedly, this is a funny way of talking about the Brexit changes. if you want to avoid digging in the garden, which a lot of people do, right, because it's pretty backbreaking work, if you manure regularly and you use a mulch.
What's regularly? Like how often?
Once a year.
What? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I thought we were talking like bi-monthly or something.
No, well, so this is why you mulch. So if you were to put wood chips or straw or anything like that over the surface, think of the earth like a body and mulch being like a skin, right? You wouldn't want to walk around without a skin, right? It would be terrible for your internal organs, and that is essentially what the soil is, right? It's a bioorganic system. It's a habitat. It's a living, breathing thing. It's full of mycelium. It's full of these small microorganisms. And if you don't have something over the top of it, whether it's grass, literal grass growing, straw, wood chips, you're essentially exposing it to the elements. So every time it rains, the water washes away everything that's living there. You want to cover it and protect it. And then over the course of the growing season, rain, sunlight, people walking on it, the mulch breaks down. So the wood, the straw, etc., biodegrades and contributes to the healthiness of the soil. So you do that, then let's say you get to, I don't know, November, October maybe, and you finish growing. So you rake the mulch back, slam on some more manure, slam on some more fertilizer, whatever it is you're going with, it might be just compost. If you're gardening properly, then you have your own compost heap. Cover it back over with mulch, maybe top up the mulch a bit more.
Skin back on, yeah.
Yeah. Peel your skin back, do the zip back up, and then by the time you get around to spring and you're planting again, happy days.
Nice. Brexit.
Yes, Brexit. I mean, it's nicer talking about gardening, isn't it?
Well, I actually quite enjoyed it. I don't know anything about gardening.
Ed keeps telling me that I should start doing a gardening TikTok.
Oh, you should, yeah. Yeah, you should. Come with me to plant tomatoes. Mm. What have you got cooking at the moment?
I haven't actually put anything in the ground yet, which is a little behind. But
just all mulch.
It's nothing but alpaca shit and straw. Yeah. Delicious. No, there's a lot in the in the potting shed. So I mean, all sorts: tomatoes, courgettes, sweet peas, peas, broad beans. I got a heritage bean variety that someone from back home gave me. That he's been propagating for 75 years.
Wow.
Yeah, proper heritage bean.
That's really cool.
Yeah. They're good as well. I had some year just gone.
Have you ever thought about having a sourdough starter? I could imagine you having that.
Yeah, do you know what? There was a sourdough starter that happened during lockdown. And someone forgot about it. And it exploded and destroyed quite a lot of valuable technology that I owned.
Are you joking?
Nope.
That's really funny.
I didn't find it funny at the time. So there hasn't been a sourdough starter in my house since that.
That's really great.
Yeah.
What were you feeding it? How often were you feeding it?
I don't think that was the issue. I think the issue was that it had gone unchecked for a period of time.
Well.
Well, because, you know, if it's in a Tupperware and you seal it, pressure builds.
Yeah, you're not meant to do that, are you?
No, I don't think so.
You're meant to...
I think it's like a tea towel, isn't it? You're meant to have a tea towel with an elastic band around it.
Well, like a kind of like a
breathable,
loose...
semi-permeable membrane, perhaps.
Yeah, sort of like a loose glass jar is normally quite...
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you good at baking?
Yeah, but I don't like to. I don't enjoy it.
Why?
I don't... It doesn't fulfill me, you know?
Right.
Like, it feels like a task.
Do you like cooking?
No, I don't like doing that either. I will do it.
I love cooking.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah. To me, I find it so mundane.
CBA. And
yeah, it annoys me.
Mm.
Baking
is more like alchemy, I guess.
It's sort of like hereditary trauma from having to cook, maybe. That's inbuilt in me. I'm just like in these shackles. Get them off me. I don't want them. No.
Let me tell you about invisible labour again, Ollie. You fucking pig. Okay. No, I do. I like it. I find it very... prime time for me, cooking with things that I've grown.
Yeah.
If you say I don't find it fulfilling, that is literally like I'm fucking happy.
You are fulfilled.
Yes, I am fulfilled. You know, in the same... We're going to talk about our sister dying in a moment, but like if... But if you, you know how quite often, so if you're going to, if you have to like euthanize, for example, a pig.
No, I don't. But yeah, go on.
You'll often have, well, with any animal, really, you have a bucket of feed, might be their favorite thing to eat. pigs, 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 come on, pigs, chuck it down. Pigs, fucking happy as Larry. He's like, oh my God, fucking rotting eggs, my favorite. Yes, slop, let's go. Head down, heads down. Job done, happy.
You wouldn't waste a bullet on a pig, would you?
How would you do it?
Well, I wouldn't do it because Hammer. I don't...
I think you would, yeah. I don't know about the legality of doing that. I will say that right now. I think
I don't think that people are shooting pigs. I think that's maybe a hog.
What's the distinction?
In my head, it's much larger. I don't know.
No, so obviously, if
you wouldn't want to shoot if you're, a pig, I'd feel terrible. No, I think.
Well, okay. Well, interesting. Okay, interesting conversation to have here. Because what I've just described to you, right? Favorite meal for the pig. Head down in the food, lost in ecstasy.
Mm.
He's in nirvana right now. Knows nothing about it. Bang, dead. Job done. If you want to put that pig in the food chain, what I've just described to you is illegal. You cannot do that.
Mm,
you have to. You have to send it to an abattoir.
Right.
What does that mean for a pig? It means putting it in the back of a trailer, somewhere that it doesn't usually go. Probably in quite close proximity with a load of other pigs. The stress level, the hydrocortisol level, is already increasing right in that animal. Pigs are fucking smart. Pigs are very intelligent animals.
Mm.
Have you ever smelt a dead animal? You've stumbled on like a corpse of something out in, or whatever, and that smell, that rotting smell, right?
Mm.
Knowing full well that humans have a terrible sense of smell. Other animals much, much stronger. When that pig gets to the abattoir, it smells what's happening in there. It knows what's happening in there. And most likely as well, it can hear the squealing of the other animals.
Yeah, I really don't like this sort of thing.
Stress, 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 stress. When it gets there, it goes in, it gets knocked out, and then they slit its throat. But already at that point, the adrenaline, and like I said, the hydrocortisol, that animal is already full of those things. Contrast that horrific experience, and I'm going to call it horrific. The way that we industrially produce meat, I think, is pretty sickening in this country. In most countries, actually, industrialized agriculture. Contrast that in the place that it likes to be, eating the food that it likes to eat, dead.
Right, okay, but then can the other animals not smell the death?
Look, there's a certain element of this, that if you're going to eat animals, you have to kill them in some way.
See, that's my whole argument of why I don't eat animals, because I wouldn't want to kill it.
Full stop.
Full stop. Would not want to do it.
Yeah, so I struggle with this because I think that alongside, let's say, to talk about humans for a second, you have a right as a human being not to be murdered, yeah? Right to life. We all have it. Or, well, some people would say you don't, but...
And as Ollie previously mentioned, we will be talking about assisted dying shortly.
You have a right to life.
Yeah.
I think running concurrently alongside that is a responsibility that you also have to not kill anybody else. If I want to say that I have a right to life, I have a responsibility not to kill anyone. I have a responsibility to reciprocate that right to the other people around me.
Mm.
So I think if you want to say about an animal that has a right to life, how do we mitigate for the cat that kills the songbird? How do we mitigate for the wolf that kills the deer? We can't extend right to life to animals that are part of a food chain.
I think that's why I don't like talking about this. If you have to talk about it on a panel, because I think you're always focusing on the extremes.
Mm.
Like, I just think it's such a basic point that you've already made, that the way that we produce meat in this country is appalling.
Yeah.
And that is nothing to do with the food chain. And that is not a natural way to be consuming food.
Like, absolutely.
It just categorically isn't.
Yeah.
Do I have a problem with the local butcher? No, I don't. Do I feel quite sick looking at like chickens on display in a supermarket that are going for £3 each? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the worst thing for me is those multi-packs of wings.
Mm.
It'll be like a tray and it's like 20 wings. And you're like, there's fucking 10 chickens there.
Yeah.
Right there.
And it's not, I really, with the extremes of this conversation, because it's always you're a lefty liberal and you're so wealthy that you can afford not to eat meat. It is much cheaper not to eat meat, actually. It's not a liberal Islington thing to think.
Westminster bubble.
It's not.
Yeah. No, I think ideally, my ideal, genuine, where I want to get to in my life, I want to be able to say that the only meat I eat is animals that I've raised and killed myself.
Yeah, that's your goal.
Yeah. I don't like, I at the moment, I eat a little bit of meat in my diet. I am probably have more, probably now more meat than fish, although it used to be more fish than meat for a long time. Just change of living circumstances and all the rest of it. But ethically, I'm actually not really okay with it. I don't like buying meat from a supermarket at all. And I want to get to a place eventually, you know, fucking happy days, right? Happy Valleys Farm.
Mm.
Where the only animals I eat are ones that I've killed. The only vegetables I eat are ones that I've grown. I'd like to get to not full self-sufficiency because it's kind of pretty brutal. You end up eating fucking potatoes for like too much. But I would like to get to a place where virtually everything that I eat, I've produced myself.
Mm. But there's no crimeless plate because I still eat cheese. And yeah. I would eat eggs. Actually, look, I go in and out of eggs.
If I
overthink it.
It's such a difficult to navigate space because even if, okay, so let's take wheat, right? Let's take bread. You want to eat bread, right? Where's the wheat come from? These huge monoculture fields, which themselves, by the way, there's a really significant biodiversity problem in farming in that way, where you just destroy everything in like a, let's call it a 100-acre field. And you grow nothing in it but wheat, right? Because the ground can't sustain that. You're having to use chemical fertilizers, all sorts of things. But even if, let's say, it's done in a sustainable way as possible, how is it harvested? It's a combine harvester. It's a ginormous machine with rotating blades on the front of it, 20 meters wide, that passes through the field, chops it up, and spits out into the back. Or spits out into a trailer next door. I hate to say this to people. There are animals in those fields when those combine harvesters go through. And a lot of the time, they get out of the way. A lot of the time, they don't. There is, unless you've literally participated in the production of the food from start to finish, it is basically impossible to produce it in a totally harmless way. We can do as much as we can to mitigate all kinds of harm. We absolutely should. And if you want to be a conscious consumer, I'd encourage everybody to do that.
I'm not as bothered by that, though.
Oh, really? Okay, why?
I'm not really bothered by it. I would say
because it's an accident, because it's not deliberate.
Yeah, I would say that falls into the category of the natural food cycle.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's this, right? You know, we've evolved to be omnivorous. You know, we eat plants, we eat animals, and if you want to choose, in fact, I did for a period of time choose to not eat animal products. Good for you. I fully support people in doing that. Genuinely, I you're totally right. I hate the extremes in food choices debate. I think it's ridiculous. Simultaneously, it's also I don't fundamentally have a problem with people that want to eat meat because I think it's essentially how we've evolved. Now, is the way that we produce meat at the moment, it's so far removed from the natural cycle of things, right? Where if you want to talk about sociological, you know, evolution, early human society, people aren't eating meat every day, right? people are eating foraging nuts, berries before we have.
Even
agriculture.
50 years ago, we weren't eating meat every day.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You might have had a roast chicken on a Sunday, and then you had chicken sandwiches on Monday.
Yeah,
but you didn't eat it every day.
No, and I think actually that this is kind of the thing with killing animals, etc. I think we've become so far removed from death in our society, not just animal death, human death as well. Think about how normal it was. 50 years ago is a pretty good example. 100 years ago is even better. 150 years ago is even better. How regularly, as a human being, you came into contact with death, right? You would have seen, most people, a lot of people I know, never seen a dead body. I've never seen a dead body, right? In the flesh. Never seen it.
It's because you're not a Catholic.
Never been to an open casket funeral. But I mean, even, you know, road accidents, stuff like that. I think pretty much, if we're talking, I'm running through some head. I know we completely didn't plan to talk about this, and I'm just riffing. But I think beyond sort of road accidents, in our current society, where really are you likely to see a dead person? Catholic funerals, I guess, is what you're talking about, right? Previously, illness, infant mortality was pretty high. Accidents at work, pretty regular. And if you want to go further back, regular warfare in our societies that meant that you grew up around death. Like, you if you lived, you would have seen dead people. That's the case with human beings. It's also the case with animals. We're now so far removed from the food chain that I really don't think people have considered or thought that when they walk into the chicken section of Tesco and they look at that wall of chicken, they're not even going, fuck me, that's 150 living things right there. It's just, this is food. It's not an animal. And that's wrong, I think. Because I genuinely think people would be much more selecting about the things that they did and didn't eat if they knew what has happened or where that thing came from.
Yeah, because it's so clean and it's so sanitized as well when it appears in the supermarket. You don't quite have that in the butcher. The butcher is a lot more confronting. You're like...
Got the feet on it or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, here is the dead animal. Would you like me to... Which bit of it would you like me to cut off for you?
Yeah. You have to sell... They have to sell rabbits with identifying features on them.
Really?
Yeah, because the body, the corpse, is so similar to a cat anatomically. Yeah.
Wow.
So you have to leave like the head or the feet on. So it's like, no, that's definitely a rabbit.
Mm.
Should we talk about the Brexit bill?
So anyway, all of that we've just spoken about there. If you're going to be importing it.
Mm.
As of tomorrow, you're going to have to pay up to £145 per delivery to bring it through Dover. So it's about, I think it said it was £29. Yeah, £29 per type of product and up to a maximum of £145 for a single delivery. So this is great because the past couple of months, the price at which our food is inflating has slowed.
Let's do something about that.
Yeah, let's do something about that. Just at the point where we go, oh, shit, cool, I can buy pasta again. Nah.
No, bro. No.
Oh, buffalo mozzarella become affordable again. Buffalo mozzarella. That's all I buy. It's all I buy at the supermarket, buffalo mozzarella.
Man, I went to, a mate of mine got married in Italy and I went. And one of the things they wanted to do before the wedding is this like buffalo mozzarella farm that has a restaurant attached to it.
Wow.
And the only thing on the menu is mozzarella. You order it by the kilo.
Was it pissing?
Oh, it was sodden. It also came in a special kind of plate that has a hole in it and a receptacle underneath. So it sits in the thing and gradually the moisture sort of seeps down into the bottom. And then you kind of have this swilling, delicious, salty liquid thing. And then they just bring like fresh tomatoes and bread and you basically engorge yourself on mozzarella.
I bet those tomatoes are good as well.
You know it.
There's a tomato and then there's a tomato.
Yeah, brother.
You know?
Amen.
Mm. It's like when anyone takes it out of their sandwich and they say, I hate tomatoes. You go, no.
No.
You hate British tomatoes.
That's not a tomato.
Yeah.
Yeah, bang on. I would say I've grown some good tomatoes myself, but we've spoken about tomato production before on the pod.
Have we?
I'm pretty sure. About preserving the tomatoes as they're transported. About the gas that ripens the tomato.
Yes, we have, yeah.
Yeah. Big topics getting discussed on this.
So what's going to happen with these, border target operating model that is going to come into force tomorrow. What DEFRA have sort of unofficially told Border Force and civil servants is, can you not check all of them? Just like, we're going to get them to pay the fee. And then we're just going to use a bit of intelligence.
Yeah, targeted. But what's targeted checks.
What's funny is they call it target intelligence, but like at the same time, it's kind of like, I know what they mean by that, but it's also like, just, you know, it's like use your brain.
Winks as good as a nod to a blind bat.
So what you've basically got is a load of border officials who's going to be looking up and down. I don't know what intelligence you might have about what's inside a lorry of flowers.
He's trafficking sardines.
Because, you know, what?
Get him, boys.
Do you know what I mean? Interpol are going to ring up and go, listen.
Yeah.
He's got more meat in there than he's letting on. Like.
We've had a tip off.
Yeah.
There's
foot and mouth in that.
It's full of chorizo.
Yeah. It doesn't meet the UK standards, which, by the way, are currently lower than the EU standards.
Phytosanitary standards.
Yeah, there you go. Phytosanitary standards.
How big an issue do you think this is? Because clearly, across whole swathes, right, of the negotiated settlement...
Swathes.
Brexit's not really working.
Wow. Haven't you just revealed yourself?
Yes. If it wasn't clear, if it wasn't obvious, yeah. Lefty, lovey, yeah. Remainer, FBPE, woke, moron. It's not working, is it? Is it?
I've just been really distracted by my friend that I've been booking all the Pilates with for this week.
Mm.
Sorry, just to, if we needed to really up the Islington.
Lefty.
No, no,
lovey,
no. This is my
woke,
first time doing it.
Oh, sorry, is it Brexit Pilates?
This is my first time doing
Lever
it.
Lever Pilates.
I've decided
yeah,
I want to be snatched for summer. Snatched. Not snatch. And
I didn't do anything. Why are you saying that
anyway,
to me?
And this bitch that I've just booked on to go with, she's gone to an extra class today. That means she's going to be ahead of me.
Yeah.
What am I going to... What the...
I've never done Pilates. I
no, neither have I.
What do they teach you on at the academy day one?
I don't know, but like every hot woman I've seen, I've been like, what do you do? And they're like, Pilates.
Really?
So, yeah. It really is like the Venn diagram of hot women and Pilates is a circle. That's it. Yeah. Oh, wait, do you know what's really funny? Sorry, just loads of funny things coming up at the moment. My friend's mum is doing the garden. In, I guess, doing what you like to do.
Yeah.
Gardening. And she's just dug up the dead cat.
She'll know what a dead animal smells like. It's pretty rotted. Yeah. It's pretty rotted. It'll be a scare. How yeah, when did it die?
Will that be, do you think that'll
when
be,
did it die?
Oh, only a couple of months ago. Do you think it'll be, yeah. Ooh. Do you think it'll be good for the soil, all that?
I mean, yes.
Mm.
I don't think.
Because I would say that's part of the food chain. That's all right.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, it will be. How long have we been going for? We might have to draw a line under this.
I know. Let's just finish Brexit. So, okay. So the big problem is that a lot of flowers come in from the Netherlands, and they are
with
obviously...
With chorizo in between the tulip stems.
Yes.
Smuggling it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what they should do? Is it that moss? What's the thing that they, for flower arranging? You know, the green stuff
that
they stick
the green
them in?
Green foam stuff.
You could sort of get a very moldy cheese and do that, and that would be one way of smuggling cheese in as well.
How do flowers fare in the middle of blue cheese?
I'm sure it'd be fine.
Would they not draw all the moisture out of the cheese?
I suspect so, yeah. I think the
cheese
would probably...
You seem to know a lot about phyno-sanitary, but fuck all about cheese moisture.
I don't think the cheese would taste very nice.
Those buffalo mozzarellas would turn up dry.
Yeah, dry as hell.
They would be, they'd be like rocks.
Your mozzarella's got to be wet, hasn't it?
You do need it wet.
Mm.
So the physical checks will be intelligence-led for the foreseeable future. But you don't get a discount on that. You still got to pay top dollar for some guy called Bill to go, looks all right.
What's wrong with guys called Bill?
I'm just hypothesising.
Okay.
I'm giving a bit of colour.
But there are businesses that literally import huge amounts of food through this crossing.
Yeah.
That presumably, this is going to mean hundreds of thousands of pounds of extra costs for their businesses.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think this is really... To me, this is Brexit Britain because it's more expensive.
For the same thing.
For the same thing. So
nothing tastes as good as sovereignty feels, baby.
Isn't that the truth? But also, Sean, this will throw into the air the question about the tomatoes that I was telling you about that you can get in on Sloane Square. Do you remember I was telling you about that? During the summer, you can go and buy tomatoes that have literally come off the field that morning in Italy. You can buy them. Like after 2 p.m.
Mamma mia.
Yeah. I mean, the price is stupid. Stupid.
I believe it, yeah.
Worth every penny.
Yeah, I bet. Fuck me.
Like the best tomato you'll ever eat, you know?
Is it a shop? Is it like a stall?
You know, it's a shop. Yeah.
Different gravy in Chelsea, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But they come off the field at like 2 in the morning. They're here by 2 p.m. But I don't know how they're going to do that now. I don't think they drive it. They must fly it in. I can't drive it. I'm such a stupid fuck, aren't I? I don't think they drive it.
How long would it take you to drive? Yeah, I mean...
Are we driven to
Northern
Italy,
I think you could probably do in about 14, 16 hours maybe.
I think we drove
right
to...
Right at the top?
I want to say it takes 19 hours to drive to where we go in Italy.
You have to go through the Alps, wouldn't you? So that will
you
take
some time.
You do go
through the Alps, yeah.
Yeah. It'll take some time.
Or you can make it a bit longer and you can go through. You can do like a little stopover places and stuff. It's quite nice. Yeah, you can go, you know, it depends if you want to come at it. You want to come at Italy through Lake Como. That's quite nice.
I think if you are going to come at Italy, you do want to come at it through Lake Como.
Yeah.
You would choose that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, rather than getting on a ferry.
I don't think we've done this chat on the podcast. Italy for me is now top tier European nation. Up there with Greece.
Yeah. But you went to a good part of it.
Is there a bad part of it?
Yeah, if you want to feel kind of like the sort of stagnation that we're experiencing here. Like, you want to have that real local council feel.
But sunny.
But you want to have that feel of, like, nothing's working.
Yeah.
Go to where I'm from. And the real sense that, if you want to feel like The Sopranos, but not the sexy side of The Sopranos, not like Big Tony and his meat hands, like... You just want to feel like the bins aren't getting collected and there's a lot of corruption here. Napoli is your place.
Yes. I like Naples.
Mm.
I like it. I was a taxi ride, I remember distinctly. Regular road, cars parked both sides, so a single track. Taxi driver, I would say comfortably 50 miles an hour. And at junctions, where you would typically give way, not stopping, just honking the horn to indicate that he was coming.
Yeah, well, you can't stop, because if you stop, someone might get into your car.
Yeah. And then someone was coming at the crossroads, coming the opposite way. And apparently that guy had done something wrong, because he was shouting and screaming at him. But to me, it just looked like that guy was also doing the same thing that the taxi driver was doing. But I mean, who the fuck knows? Love Italy, hate bastards, hate nonces. Does it work? Love Italy, hate nonces?
Love Italy, hate nonces. Yeah. I don't know, man.
New starter?
Well, I mean, Vatican is an independent state, isn't it? I just said something that wasn't connected. Oh no, the Pope's going to sue me.
See you in hell,
Francis.
Have I done something wrong? Are you angry with me?
No. Because I keep...
Taking the piss out of me, yeah.
I'm not taking the piss out of you. I was taking the piss out of Italy. Italians. I've come from the whole nation. For the whole nation.
You've come from the whole nation of Italy.
Yeah. No assisted dying, no?
No, I don't think we have time for assisted dying.
Okay. Well, why don't we do it tomorrow?
We could do it tomorrow.
Who's going to stop us?
There is talk, listeners, of a very special guest appearing on the next episode of the podcast.
Is there?
We were talking about it not 2 hours ago.
Yeah, but I know, but there's scheduling.
We'll leave it there, shall we?
Yeah.
We don't know if they're coming or not, so. Unlike the nation of Italy. Mm. Is that the end?
Yeah.
All right, very good. Great podcasting, great little cameo from Laura. See you in the subreddit. Any advice for the audience?
What would I need to advise them on?
They could leave a comment or a review.
Go on then.
Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you on the next one.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.